Would you please rise for the arrival of Her Excellency, the Right Honorable Michael Jean, Governor General of Canada, Mesdames et Messieurs, voulez-vous lever, s'il vous plaît, pour l'arrivée de Son Excellence, la très honorable Michael Jean, Gouverneur Général du Canada. I would invite my fellow board members, Deanne Sauve and Fred Lowe, on stage.
Excellences, professeur Monroe Bloom, distingués invités, mesdames et messieurs, nous sommes profondément honorés, Votre Excellence, de votre présence parmi nous aujourd'hui. Au nom de mon époux Jean-François Sauvé, qui se trouve actuellement sur un vol en provenance d'Europe autour de l'Atlantique, en tout cas je l'espère, je vous remercie de tout cœur d'avoir accepté d'assister à cette conférence inaugurale de la Fondation Jeanne Sauvé. Et j'anticipe avec beaucoup d'intérêt votre allocution et votre participation. Votre Excellence, nous avons partagé avec vous il y a quelques jours à peine la fierté et l'émotion de toute une nation lorsque vous avez déclaré à la planète entière que les Jeux olympiques d'hiver étaient officiellement ouverts à Vancouver et lorsque vous avez rendu hommage à la jeunesse du monde et à la solidarité de l'humanité générée autour de la pratique des sports. La conférence inaugurale d'aujourd'hui se veut être aussi une célébration de la jeunesse et de la solidarité internationale, certes plus modeste, mais qui accorde la même place aux idéaux d'excellence, de fraternité et de paix. En mettant sur pied la Fondation Jeanne Sauvé, ma belle-mère a voulu créer une institution vouée au développement du leadership international dans toutes les initiatives humaines, quelle que soit leur forme. L'idée de cette fondation était le fruit de la précieuse expérience qu'elle avait personnellement acquise comme jeune activiste au sein de l'Assemblée mondiale de la jeunesse, qui a vu le jour dans la foulée de la Seconde Guerre mondiale. Son époux, Maurice Sauvé, fut d'ailleurs le premier président de cet organisme qui offrait aux jeunes un lieu de rencontre et qui était un porte-voix à leurs aspirations et à leurs préoccupations. Au fil de la carrière qu'elle a menée comme journaliste, députée, président de la Chambre des communes et gouverneur général du Canada, Madame Sauvé a pris toujours plus conscience de l'utilité de ses premières expériences politiques et compris à quel point elles avaient éclairé et influencé sa perception du monde et ses valeurs. Tout au long de sa vie politique et des années passées au gouvernement, elle a rencontré d'anciens délégués de la jeunesse qui avaient eux aussi accédé à des postes de pouvoir et de leadership dans leurs pays respectifs. Pour elle, le plus bel héritage qu'elle pouvait laisser de ses fonctions officielles consistait à créer une tribune permanente qui permettrait aux jeunes de profiter d'une expérience et d'un réseau similaire. Madame Sauvé espérait qu'en réunissant sous un même toit les éléments les plus brillants et les plus remarquables de notre jeunesse, afin de discuter et de débattre des grandes questions du moment, tout en apprenant à se connaître et à découvrir d'autres croyances, elle susciterait chez ces jeunes d'exception un sentiment accru de fraternité, de solidarité, un intérêt plus marqué pour la coopération internationale et un engagement plus fort envers les idéaux de justice, de tolérance et de paix. Elle souhaitait qu'ils assument, le moment venu, les pouvoirs liés à la vocation qu'ils auraient volontairement embrassée dans un esprit éclairé et avec une conscience plus aiguë du monde, ainsi que de leur propre potentiel et rôle. Le programme phare de la Fondation Jeanne Sauvé a été conçu en fonction de ces objectifs. J'ai maintenant le plaisir de céder la parole au docteur Fred Louis, qui va vous parler des boursiers sauvés.
Excellency, this morning you met the Sauvé scholars. You know what kind of people they are. In fact, we have with us now 14 scholars from around the world. Altogether, the Sauvé program has honored and has welcomed 87 scholars from 44 countries. The scholars who are here now, the ones you met this morning, have been selected from hundreds of applicants. They are young people united in their hope to make a contribution for a positive, better world. I'd like to say something about the relationship with McGill University. The scholars have been accorded by McGill a unique status which enables them to access all McGill courses, which provides them with a McGill mentor of very high quality, an academic mentor, and access to McGill's facilities. In turn, the scholars, through their involvement, enrich the fabric of McGill's community and the intellectual life of McGill. We at the Sauvé Foundation are very grateful to McGill University and proud of the association with McGill. It's a strong bond. We're delighted on this occasion to join McGill University in honoring Her Excellency the Governor General for the very first Jean Sauvé lecture. The Foundation's founding executive director, the late James Wright, served on the McGill Board of Governors for 9 years, becoming Governor Emeritus. Now, the relationship between the Sauvé Foundation and McGill University, to a large extent, came to being because of Jim Wright. And, of course, he's been reinforced throughout by the cooperation and indeed the active participation of the McGill faculty and the McGill administration, and particularly the principal. Now, just a word about the principal, Excellency, Votre Excellence. Je sais que vous connaissez déjà Madame Heather Monroe Bloom, la rectrice très aimée de l'Université McGill, tout comme la très honorable Jeanne Sauvé et vous-même. La rectrice Monroe Bloom a remporté des réussites importantes dans le champ social, dans plusieurs domaines, dis-je, contribuant ainsi à notre société entière. Tout comme vous, Madame la gouverneure générale, elle est une femme visionnaire, dévouée, une vraie leader. Mesdames et messieurs, c'est alors avec grand plaisir que j'invite Madame la rectrice à monter ici en scène, au podium, afin de présenter à vous, mesdames et messieurs, notre conférencière plus distinguée.
Thank you, Dr. Lowy, for that very, very generous introduction. Let me say, as principal of McGill, bienvenue particulièrement notre gouverneur général, vos excellences. C'est un honneur et source de fierté pour nous ici à McGill de vous faire une très grande bienvenue. Et à vos équipes aussi. I also wanted to, in addition to recognizing Dr. Fred Lowy, who is a distinguished diplomat de McGill, but also ancien rector of Concordia, and Dr. Judith Woodsworth, who is the current president of Concordia University, and Rector Luc Vinet from our sister university, Université de Montréal. And I'd like to just build on Fred Lowy's words in recognizing the exceptional leadership of our colleague and dear friend, Jim Wright, and to say how grateful we are to his wife, Nancy Wright, for picking up the reins and staying the course and supporting our Solvay scholars with the same warmth and ambition that Jim did, and to recognize as well the foundational contributions and continuing support of Sunny Gordon. We are enormously proud of our links with this program. You can imagine how delighted I am to welcome you all here this evening for this magnificent event, an opportunity to celebrate excellence in youth. That's what universities are all about, and to encourage youth engagement in an increasingly globalized world. Il s'agit d'un événement exceptionnel car il marque la tenue de la première conférence Jean Sauvé. It is my great pleasure then to also invite back to the University Her Excellency the Right Honorable Michael Jean, Governor General de Canada and official visitor to McGill University. In fact, we're delighted to welcome the Governor General back to McGill after her last visit here in 2006 when she received an honorary Doctor of Letters and inspired extraordinarily the graduating class of 2006 with her commitment, dynamism, and encouragement of them to play their role. Her Excellency is a unique visitor to McGill as the holder of the Governor General's office, is also McGill's official visitor, a responsibility added to the job description when the university's charter was amended in 1852. As Governor General, Madame Jean is the Commander-in-Chief of Canada, our diplomatic head, representing Canada during state visits abroad and at Rideau Hall and the Citadel de Quebec, and for all of those here, myself included, who've had the pleasure of meeting our Governor General previously, you know that there is nothing simply ceremonial about the role that she plays. She gives her heart, her extraordinary intellect, and her dedication to this role in a way that serves well the legacy created by Jean Sauvé. Madame Jean has served with distinction since being sworn in as Governor General on September 27, 2005, as the 27th Governor General since Confederation of Canada. Née à Port-au-Prince, en Haïti, Madame Jean a immigré au Québec avec sa famille à l'âge de 11 ans. Our hearts are with you, Your Excellency, as they are with the people of Haiti, as they begin their arduous process of rebuilding after the devastating events of January 12th. Nous partageons la douleur du peuple haïtien et nous sommes déterminés à faire tout en notre pouvoir pour lui prêter main forte. Madame Jean est titulaire d'un diplôme en langue et littérature espagnole et italienne, ainsi qu'en littérature comparée de notre proche consoeur, l'Université de Montréal. Her Excellency enjoyed a distinguished career as a multilingual journalist for 17 years prior to her appointment as Governor General. She's collaborated on a number of award-winning, important documentary films produced by her husband, filmmaker Jean-Daniel Lafond. She has received numerous distinctions and has been named to the Ordre National, to the Ordre des Chevaliers de la Pléiade, and has been made an honorary citizen of the City of Montreal and le Ministère de l'Immigration et des Relations avec les Citoyens de Québec. As Governor General, Madame Jean has identified youth as a hallmark theme of her leadership, one that she's joined with her other passions for bringing focus to the North and to bringing progressive, determined leadership to advancing progress and collaboration for youth and in the North. Today's inaugural address and youth dialogue provide a warm and wonderful opportunity for us to celebrate not only the pioneering vision of the Right Honorable Jean Sauvé that was so eloquently described by Madame Sauvé today, but also that of our Governor General Michael Jean, and to recognize the extraordinary impact of the Sauvé Scholars Program, which Dr. Lowy has described for you. along with distinguished McGill alumni and our academic colleagues, many of whom are with us here today and have served as academic mentors to the Sauvé Scholars. I've taken pride in each remarkable group of young leaders that have come together in this unique program. Today's event is an opportunity for us to recognize their achievements as well and to share in their promise, but it is also an opportunity to reinforce our collective commitment to build ways for young scholars and youth leaders to shine light on the next generation of community contribution, international leadership, knowledge creation and dissemination, and to understand how important youth leadership is in this very moment. Je sais que notre invité d'honneur partage cette conviction absolument. This inaugural address reflects Madame Jean's profound belief that the development of excellence is part of a social cohesion and identity project that is vital for Canada's future. Please join with me in welcoming Her Excellency, Madame Michelle Jean.
Merci infiniment, Madame Bloom. Monsieur Trudeau, Madame Sauvé, Mr. Gordon, Dr. Lowy, Dr. Monroe Bloom, Provo Massy, membre du Conseil des gouverneurs de la Fondation Jeanne Sauvé et de McGill, Deans, Sauvé Scholars, Students, très chers amis. Permettez-moi d'abord de vous dire à quel point c'est un honneur pour moi d'être ici en votre compagnie, de vous remercier de m'avoir invité à prendre part à la toute première conférence Jeanne Sauvé sur un thème qui me tient beaucoup à cœur, l'engagement des jeunes au XXIe siècle, un appel au changement à l'heure de la mondialisation. For our friends here who do not understand French, let me tell you how delighted I am to take part in the first Jeanne Sauvé address on an issue that is so close to my heart, youth engagement in the 21st century, inspiring change in an era of globalization. Je suis particulièrement touchée et honorée que l'on m'ait demandé d'inaugurer cet événement, car il est profondément ancré dans le legs laissé par l'un de mes prédécesseurs, une femme remarquable, une femme formidable, dont on a souligné le mérite tout à l'heure, et avec qui je partage une forte affinité d'esprit, la très honorable Jeanne Sauvé. Like millions of Canadian women, I am profoundly indebted to Madame Sauvé for her courage and her vision. I believe that she helped pave the way for greater gender equality in Canada by becoming the first female elected as Speaker of the House of Commons, the first person to open a daycare on Parliament Hill, and of course, the first woman to serve as Governor General of Canada. Moved by her deep conviction that, in her own words, Canada is above all else a country of hope. She refused to yield to the pressures of prejudice and patriarchal tradition. Instead, Madame Sauvé chose to work tirelessly to advance national unity, global peace, and excellence among young people across Canada and abroad. And I sense that the Sauvé Scholars Program, which we are celebrating this afternoon, may constitute a pinnacle of Madame Sauvé's efforts to promote a global culture of peace through youth leadership. Et dans le discours qu'elle a prononcé à l'ouverture de la Conférence nationale des jeunes leaders en 1991, Jeanne Sauvé a insisté sur la nécessité d'encourager les jeunes chefs de file à explorer la diversité et la pluralité des cultures, des croyances religieuses, des idéologies et des systèmes de façon à reconnaître et mettre à l'œuvre les principes et les valeurs que l'humanité a en partage, les éléments que tous tiennent pour sacrés. Et je dirais que j'abonde moi aussi en ce sens, car s'il est important, oui, de célébrer, comme nous aimons le faire au Canada, la richesse de notre diversité et de revendiquer haut et fort nos différences, il est tout aussi crucial d'identifier et de puiser du brassage des cultures la somme de tout ce qui peut mieux nous rassembler. Et en ce sens, les universités, notamment l'Université McGill, ont un rôle primordial à jouer et à assumer. Il nous faut parcourir avec enthousiasme et créativité tout ce que nous avons en commun. Il nous faut recourir à cette riche mosaïque des idées qui trouvent leur force dans leur universalité et qui ont traversé le temps et l'histoire. Et il n'y a pas meilleur moyen de remonter le fil de l'expérience dont la grande famille humaine est issue que celui de cultiver et approfondir ce savoir et de s'en servir dans un processus dynamique et créatif pour aller de l'avant. For we are living in a world in which spaces for critical debate, spaces for reflection and civic action are increasingly being assailed by the alluring sirens of fleeting gratification and cultural conformity. More and more we see how impersonal market forces are influencing public life, while notions of the common good and altruistic action are being challenged by an ethic of everyone for himself or for his clan. In the minds of many today, globalization has become synonymous with the logic of wealth accumulation, diminishing the capacity of citizens and even entire societies to tackle challenges in their communities, their countries, and the wider world. Therefore, it is urgent that we, as a global community, begin asking ourselves a few critical questions. In this era of globalization, how do we reconnect citizens with their inner and collective power to effect change? How do we breathe new life into the universal principles of fellowship, human dignity, compassion, justice, and freedom? How do we reintroduce the aim of bringing people together around common goals? How do we revitalize the public sphere, to use the expression of Jürgen Habermas? Well, believe me, for each of these questions, I have seen hundreds of young people identify and implement concrete solutions. And it is so inspiring to see them move from words to action. En effet, au cours des quatre dernières années de mon mandat en qualité de 27e gouverneur général du Canada, j'ai eu le privilège, et c'est un grand privilège, un immense privilège, que ce soit au Canada ou lors de missions à l'étranger, d'aller à la rencontre de nombreux jeunes, sur leur terrain, dans leurs espaces de vie et d'action, dans plusieurs écoles et de nombreuses universités, dans la rue et dans des organismes communautaires, dans des lieux de création artistique et de rassemblement culturel, tant en milieu urbain que dans des localités rurales ou des collectivités autochtones. Or, partant des innombrables conversations et discussions que j'ai pu avoir avec tous ces jeunes que j'ai écoutés, et il faut prendre ce temps, le temps d'écouter, lors des nombreux dialogues et forums auxquels j'ai participé à leur côté, et à travers toutes ces initiatives menées par des jeunes, pour des jeunes, dont j'ai pris connaissance et que j'ai visitées, Eh bien, partout, je vais vous dire ce qui m'a frappé. C'est la pertinence des idées et la pertinence des solutions émanant de la jeunesse. Partout, j'ai constaté combien la force de leur leadership, ici, maintenant, est indéniable et à quel point s'en détourner serait une erreur. And that is why I stand before you today convinced that one of our greatest hopes for a better world resides in the luminous engagement of young people. This may be hard to believe when so many youth are portrayed as being hypnotized by the shop until you drop doctrine, or caught up in a me, myself, and I mindset. Yet a completely new generation of young peoples is actually using the instruments of globalization as critical tools for engagement, reviving the very ancient concept of citizenship. Let us take as an example the global urban arts and hip-hop movement, with which I have collaborated through the Governor General's Urban Arts Forums and Youth Dialogues, because I wanted to reach out to young people on their terms and on their ground. While hip-hop has become a multi-million dollar entertainment industry in which violence against women, homophobia, and crime are often glorified, I discovered that a new movement is afoot. Millions of young people around the world are working in their barrios, favelas, neighborhoods or hoods, and other spaces to release the arts from the grip of the market and transform them into instruments of social transformation, thus giving a voice to the voiceless. And for them, creating art is not simply a matter of aesthetics or profit. Art is about sowing the seeds of hope in places left barren by the fend-for-yourself mentality. For young artists are using the tools of global communication to exchange ideas and collaborate with their peers in other parts of the world in ways that would have been unimaginable just 50 years ago. And I have heard so many young people tell me, "Excellency, the arts saved my life." This new habitus, to cite Pierre Bourdieu, is indeed bearing interesting results. Lower crime rates. I think of the youth of graffiti gallery in Winnipeg's neighborhood of North Point Douglas, who, in the scope of 8 months, mobilized their entire community to reduce an extremely high crime rate by 70%. More socially conscious and politically engaged citizens and communities. I think of youth organization Apathy is Boring, which is using art and new information technologies to empower a new generation of voters. Ilona Doherty will soon be telling us more about this organization's sustained efforts to combat indifference and promote democratic participation among youth. La survie des langues en voie de disparition. Je pense à Samian, le premier rappeur algonquin du Québec, qui utilise le hip-hop pour préserver une langue et une culture autochtone menacées. Sauver des vies que l'exclusion jette dans la rue. Je pense à la Maison des jeunes de la Côte-des-Neiges, ici même à Montréal, qui par la force des mots, la poésie, la musique, la danse, le documentaire, reconstruisent des liens, rassemblent des jeunes autour de projets constructifs et les ramènent à la vie. suicide prevention. I think of Blueprint for Life, a grassroots breakdance collective that is offering young Inuit an opportunity to re-embrace life, to share their thoughts on common challenges, and to believe in themselves and their capacities. And let me tell you, this is actually saving many, many lives and encouraging a growing number of youth in the North to go back to or to stay in school. Campaigns to influence multilateral forums. I think of the Ignite the Americas movement, which is allowing disenfranchised youth from across the Americas to influence policymaking at the Organization of American States. Efforts to promote greater mutual understanding. Just last week, as the honorary patron of the Vancouver 2010 Olympic Truce, I engaged in a high-energy dialogue with 600 Indigenous and non-Indigenous youth from across Canada. And despite the great diversity in the room, the young leaders all shared a desire to shatter the barriers of cultural differences, prejudice, exclusion, racism, and ignorance in order to foster greater understanding, reconciliation, and collaboration among all sectors of Canadian society. Et je peux vous dire que ce qui m'inspire et me rend des plus enthousiastes, c'est de voir tous ces jeunes qui agissent à la fois à une échelle très locale et qui établissent aussi des réseaux extrêmement dynamiques au cœur d'un mouvement beaucoup plus vaste et plus fluide, un mouvement mondial en faveur du changement. Un mouvement mondial qui mise sur les nouvelles technologies d'information pour faire circuler des idées et créer des liens solides qui vont au-delà des frontières, au-delà de l'espace, au-delà du temps, de la culture, de la religion et de la langue. And in so doing, they are partaking in what I would describe as the globalization of solidarities. The globalization of solidarities refers to citizens saying no to a world in which the survival of the fittest dictates social relations. Saying no to a world in which our obsession with profit makes us turn a blind eye on suffering. Saying no to a world in which prosperity is detrimental to our environment. And saying yes to a world in which we stand together, hand in hand, to build societies in which everyone, everywhere, has an equal opportunity to achieve his or her highest potential. Et je crois profondément que l'humanité progresse quand cesse l'indifférence. L'humanité progresse lorsque les forces se conjuguent pour réaliser l'impossible. Et il m'arrive aussi de penser que nous entrons dans une nouvelle ère où commence à prévaloir une formidable éthique du partage. Prenons la réponse sans précédent du monde entier, chez nous y compris, à la suite du violent séisme qui a dévasté Haïti. Ça me semble être un très grand indice de cette nouvelle éthique du partage. Alors que les images insoutenables de dévastation, de détresse, de souffrance et de dénuement ont déferlé sur tous les écrans, nous avons vu aussi le mur de l'indifférence fortement ébranlé. On voit des citoyennes et des citoyens, des élèves, des étudiants, des organisations locales et internationales, des institutions, des corporations professionnelles, des gouvernements, tous les paliers, municipal, provincial, fédéral, des artistes et des médias rassemblés, des employeurs et des travailleurs, des riches et des pauvres, des grandes puissances et des pays en voie de développement, tous mobilisés pour venir en aide au pays le plus pauvre des Amériques. Et mobilisés dès les premières heures pour les secours d'urgence, tellement que le grand défi venait de coordonner et de gérer tout cela, mais mobilisés toujours un mois plus tard pour soutenir les efforts de reconstruction qui s'étaleront, mes amis, nous le savons, sur des décennies. Où que j'aille, ils sont tellement nombreux et elles sont tellement nombreuses à m'approcher pour me dire leur désir profond de poser un geste, de faire campagne ou pour m'informer de leurs initiatives en solidarité avec le peuple d'Haïti. Cet élan est sans précédent. Et il semble vouloir perdurer, alors que les images aiguës de la crise humanitaire ne font plus la une des médias. Il semble vouloir perdurer. Et ça me laisse espérer que nous avons toutes les raisons de croire en l'avènement d'un monde plus fraternel. Wherever I go, so many people approach me to tell me how they would like to do something, to campaign or simply to inform me about their initiatives in solidarity with the people of Haiti. And this unprecedented outpouring, which seems to have endured even as the humanitarian crisis no longer leads the media headlines, leaves me hoping that we have all the reasons to believe that we are participating in the emergence of a more fraternal world. And this is about instilling a new global consciousness of caring and sharing. But this process starts when every one of us accepts our shared responsibility and takes action and moves out of our comfort zone. One step at a time, every gesture counts. Every action matters. And I know that many of you here are already engaged in this endeavor. So I'm so happy to be here. I'm so happy that we can find here a space where we can engage in a conversation and a dialogue. And I look forward to hearing you about your experiences. Merci infiniment. Et c'est un immense plaisir, un immense privilège et un honneur que de pouvoir partager avec vous cet espace de rencontre, de dialogue et d'échange sur des idées qui sont capitales pour l'avenir de l'humanité. Et sachons-le, je l'ai dit tout à l'heure, chaque geste, chaque mot compte et peut faire toute la différence. Merci infiniment.
Your Excellency, you will know that in 1988, Her Excellency, the Right Honorable Jean Sauvé, opened the Games of the Winter Olympics in Calgary, Alberta. It is impossible not to connect that time with this when just last week he opened the Games of the Winter Olympics in Vancouver, British Columbia. And it is impossible not to connect the very obvious depth of character that defines every athlete who will participate in Vancouver with our focus here, in the name of the Jean Sauvé Foundation. I think we can all agree that the lasting achievement of the Games is punctuated by celebration, challenge, determination, and courage, but perhaps more than any of this, by events that are shaped by young people who easily reflect the face of leadership in the 21st century. I hope we can all agree that the lasting achievement of this foundation will do no less. And so I believe it is correct to suggest, Excellency, drawing this parallel to another described in early careers as bilingual and bicultural communicators who share a time in journalism and broadcasting, that your address today is not only timely and welcome, but is also enormously fitting. Lorsque venait le temps d'envisager la personne la plus apte à représenter les valeurs véhiculées par notre programme et la vision de notre fondatrice, votre nom s'est imposé d'emblée. Toutes deux femmes de première, vous incarnez les possibilités réelles et tangibles pour que c'est saisir une opportunité de surmonter les obstacles et de s'accomplir pleinement. We are honored that our foundation is distinguished with your presence and that this event is established with your remarks. You have motivated Canadians everywhere in your passionate support for Haiti and helped Canada find its role as a leader in the global response to the massive devastation that has occurred there. Closer to home, to your long adopted home, you've been a tireless champion for women in disadvantaged circumstances, but you have also reached out to our First Nations, helping them find their place within the ancient traditions that shape the culture of this country. You've connected forever these peoples to the land of their birth and the birth of their ancestors, reintroducing Canada and Canadians in a lasting way to those whose historic names today mark the towns and cities, rivers and lakes we all share and often enjoy. The inspiration necessary for change is easily defined in the young. But this suggests that as we grow older, we carry our burdens poorly if we cannot find it in us to rise and start anew, to confront the challenges, to rediscover purpose and a balance with wisdom that moves us to press ahead. By your living example and inspiration, by the words you have offered today, you paint a picture of leadership that is unfailing in its commitment to the opportunity available to every life and the dignity and respect it deserves in trying to seize those sometime elusive prospects. On behalf of the Foundation and everyone in this room, thank you for giving leadership a face of grace that we will be forever wise and determined. We shall now proceed to the youth dialogue part of the program to be moderated by Daisy Marie McGraw, Executive Director of the Jean Sauvé Foundation. Not only does Daisy Ray head up our foundation and Sauvé Scholars Program, she has long been a leader in her own right as an advocate and expert in the fields of global warning, of climate change and international development. Desiree is one of only five Canadians under the age of 40 who have just been chosen by the World Economic Forum as an emerging global leader in recognition of her professional accomplishments, commitment to society, and potential to contribute to the shaping of the future of the world through inspiring leadership. I now invite Desiree and the panel to come on stage.
Thank you, Sunny. Building on the momentum generated by the Governor General's last 4 years of engagement across Canada and overseas, Her Excellency's Youth Dialogues 2009 Can We Talk series has galvanized Canadians in every part of the country to become catalysts of hope, creativity, and social transformation in their neighborhoods, villages, reserves, and society in general. Cette année, Son Excellence a lancé les dialogues jeunesse dans le cadre du rassemblement de la jeunesse autochtone aux Jeux olympiques à Vancouver. Ils ont débattu sur le thème suivant. Comment pouvons-nous utiliser les valeurs olympiques de compréhension mutuelle, de confiance, de paix et de solidarité pour accroître notre capacité de résoudre les grands défis locaux ainsi que mondiaux? Today's discussion serves as the second installment of the 2010 series of Youth Dialogues, and as articulated in Her Excellency's address, the theme today is youth engagement in the 21st century, inspiring change in an era of globalization. To address this critical issue, we have assembled not only an outstanding panel of young leaders, but also youth and student leaders within the audience, and the audience extends into Leacock 232 with 125 people, and some 300 people joining us by webcast, including our Sauvé alumni around the world. These include those who believe strongly in the power of youth, not only as leaders of tomorrow, but as leaders of today. Et j'aimerais souligner dans ce contexte la présence de Justin Trudeau, député fédéral de Papineau, ainsi que porte-parole libéral, responsable des jeunes et du multiculturalisme. Il me fait grand plaisir de vous présenter maintenant nos 5 panélistes. Ilona Doherty, Executive Director of Apathy is Boring. Gabriel Bran-Lopez, boursier sauvé ainsi que fondateur et directeur général de Fusion Jeunesse. Janet Jobson, Survey Scholar, South African Rhodes Scholar, Social Activist and Youth Engagement Specialist. Éloge Boutera, boursier sauvé, étudié en droit ici à McGill, Human Rights Advocate from Rwanda. And last but not least, Mirwais Nazat, Survey Scholar and founder of the Center for Afghanistan Progress. Youth Dialogues aims to be as dynamic and interactive as possible. So within this in mind, the panel will last slightly shortened to 45 minutes, and it will include panel discussion as well as audience discussion. The 45 minutes will be divided into 3 questions, which I'll first pose to all or some of the panelists, and then we'll open that right up to the audience. And we will have roving mics in the room, and we also have a team captain, if you will, in Leacock 232, and we hope those of you joining us in the other room will send your questions by paper and we'll do our best to address them. So without further ado, I'd like to invite the 5 panelists within 2 minutes each to address the first question. All of these questions have been distilled by from Her Excellency's address. And I would invite you, to make remarks in the language of your choice. As individuals who are deeply involved in addressing issues of social justice and democratic participation, what role do you think young people play in revitalizing civic engagement in the 21st century? And how did you yourself become engaged? Alors que vous êtes des individus profondément impliqués dans le traitement de questions de justice sociale et de la participation démocratique, quel rôle pensez-vous que les jeunes peuvent jouer afin de revivifier l'engagement civique au 21e siècle et comment vous-même vous vous êtes impliqué? I'd like to first turn to Ilona Doherty to address this question.
Thank you. So how did I get involved? I'll start with that. I attended my first protest when I was 3 years old and started my first club called the ABC Club that was going to save the world when I was in grade 2. So this has really been a lifelong passion for me. I really believe that young people are innovators and they are able to take risks that other people, as we get older, we're not able to take those kind of risks. And I believe that also young people have a perspective that is really grounded in their communities. And that's a really powerful thing. To be grounded in your community, to have your ear to the ground, is something that we need. We need that voice, we need that passion, and we need that connection to our communities. Youth have a role, I believe, in every sector of our society. I really, to use the cliche, young people are leaders of today. We need to encourage them to get involved in every capacity. But I want to highlight one particular way that I think young people can be particularly powerful. And that's in being both young social entrepreneurs and also leading their own initiatives. I think there's an incredible opportunity for mobilization amongst young people. And I think it's a capacity that is powerful and immense. And I really personally believe that we need to support young people in doing that, in mobilizing themselves. And that's one of the things that Apathy is Boring really tries to do.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I don't have my yellow flag, but I will give you an indication as you're wrapping up, but you were well within your time. Thank you. J'aimerais maintenant demander à Gabriel Bran-Lopez de répondre à la question.
Oui. Donc, dans les 3 dernières années, j'ai concentré mes efforts sur l'éducation, notamment le décrochage scolaire. Et il y a 2 ans, je suis parti en tournée autour du Québec pour rencontrer des directeurs d'école, des enseignants et des jeunes secondaires qui étaient susceptibles de décrocher. Et je leur ai posé une question. Je leur ai demandé, qu'est-ce qui vous manque pour vous impliquer et pour rester accroché? Et leurs réponses étaient toujours les mêmes. C'était, il nous manque les ressources et les mentors pour avoir des activités qui nous interpellent. So I came back to Montreal and I approached Concordia University, my alma mater and the founding partner of Utusion, as well as McGill University, UDM, UCAM, ETS, École de technologie supérieure, Polytechnique and HEC. And together we decided to hire young emerging leaders, university students or recent graduates, and send them into these high schools, not as mentors who are there once a week or once a month or once a year, but who are there on a weekly basis, who spend 15 hours a week in the fields of environment, of entrepreneurship, of music, of journalism, of technology. And they empower the kids from September till June. And I think that's one of the great ways of mobilizing, as you said, mobilizing youth, to give them the tools to get involved, because if we don't provide them with mentors and with the resources, they're not going to be able to really show their full potential. So that's how I've gotten involved. And I believe that we can all get together to tackle this issue.
Thank you, Gabriel. Janet Jobson.
Well, I wanted to do the same thing that Ilona did and go right back to the roots of where I got started in all of this. And I was born in 1984 in South Africa, which was the same year that a state of emergency was declared. And that meant that there were military and tanks on the streets of all the big cities. But the tanks and military personnel were not pointing at me. I wasn't the target of their aggression. And it took me another 15 years before I really understood what had gone on in South Africa and really my place as a white person within the whole social milieu of what had happened. And it was at a protest march when I was 15 that was on behalf of survivors of the worst crimes and gross human rights violations that had happened under apartheid, where police shut down the protest and the crowd around us told us to go home, that I realized even in a democratic society, even when you assume all the victories have been won, people can still be silenced. And that moment really solidified for me the importance of always speaking out and always trying to create space for dialogue and for critical issues to be brought up. And that was only confirmed by my experience in high school and at university, having an incredible group of peers around me that really interrogated me on critical issues. And we really challenged each other to take action and to discuss what was going on in the world, to own responsibility, as Her Excellency was saying, for everything that's happening in the world, and therefore to take action. And so I think what Gabrielle does with bringing young peers to mentor other young people is incredibly important, because that's been so transformative in my own life.
Thank you, Janet. Éloge Poutera.
Merci beaucoup, Désirée. Et dans la bonne tradition de notre université, notre institution, je vais parler dans les deux langues. 16 years ago, I lived through the genocide against Tutsis in Rwanda. My mother, who I'm grateful to say that she survived the genocide, had inspired me, even before the genocide started, to care deeply about the suffering of other people. I remember during the first war with Iraq, at the heart of the African continent in Rwanda, my mother trying to make sure that I understand that the fact that Iraq is losing and it looks like the bad guy doesn't necessarily justify the pain that a lot of Iraqis will have to suffer as a consequence of war. So I have lived through war. I know war. I know terror. I know fear that comes from witnessing hundreds and dozens of people being murdered in front of your very own eyes. I have seen this. So when I moved to this wonderful country of ours in 2002 and went to our adorable Winterpeg, as I call it, I realized that distance sometimes managed to create an illusion of living in a world apart, not knowing what is really going on the other side of the world. I realized that in spite of having written the Declaration of Human Rights in this very university, by John Humphrey in my Faculty of Law, Canadians still had a hard time understanding what do we really lose when we allow genocide to happen and look aside. what do we really lose when we don't recognize the hardship that an earthquake you can't prepare for, you can't imagine, comes and takes your entire life away. And teaching that compassion and empowering my peers, some of you in this room, to dream of making the difference and learning as you do these acts of compassion has been my work and continues to inspire me a great deal. That's why some of my peers, when they decide to go to Rwanda and work hand in hand with my mother, I still come and lend them a hand to remind them that we are bigger than the sum of our individual selves. And that's how we stay engaged, and we continue more on this message.
Merci, Eloge. You can see why Eloge is one of the main reasons that the Sauvé Scholar discussions go very, very late into the evening all together. Mirwais Nazat.
Sure. Merci, Desiree. When the climber of Mount Everest was first asked why did he decide to climb Mount Everest, his answer was, because it was there. I, just like many of our panelists today, decided to become involved because I was a product of war in Afghanistan. Just like Janet Jobson, I grew up as a child confronted with violence and tyranny in my face. In every night, there isn't a single night that passes without thinking about my childhood, walking into grade 1 and 2 in Kabul, and remembering the red, blood-stained bodies, the houses destroyed, lives shattered. I could not recognize and realize the magnitude of that trauma as a child. And that was followed by our entire lives shattered and running to a different land, becoming a refugee, which was an experience in journey, in resilience, and at the same time of darkness. But I think all those experiences would have led to nowhere had it not been with the generosity, the compassion of this country. And in 2002, I was adopted by Canadians in the beautiful city of Halifax in Maritimes. And ever since, I've had the honor of traveling to every single province of Canada and Afghanistan. But one thing that strikes me, and I say that without any cliche, that this is the most beautiful country I've ever visited, and we have some of the most beautiful people in this country. So I think that compassion is epitomized in the actions, in the presence of the audience this afternoon, in our continued commitment to say no to injustice.
Thank you, Mayor Weiss. I'd now like to open the floor to questions. We have James Townsend here on my left, and Keith Stansky, both Sauvé Scholars, and Sarah Gonzalez standing at the ready. So please feel free to raise your hand and pose a question to any of the panelists or share your thoughts. Don't be shy.
We don't bite.
They could go on and on, there's no doubt, but we would love to hear from you or for any of you watching in LECOG 232. Anything regarding the role of youth in civic engagement? Ah, Monsieur Justin Trudeau.
Just a question of breaking the ice. What do you see as the role of governments, of the responsibility of different levels of government to reach out and to empower?
Excellent question. Who would like to take a first stab at Monsieur Trudeau's question? Gabriel?
Yeah. Well, I think that our governments lack transparency and accountability. If you think about it, how is it possible that we as individuals can click on a mouse through Google and find any information that we want, but we can't find out whether our elected officials really did what they said they would do during the campaign? How is it that we can, you know, search the corners of the world and we can't find out whether the elected officials are corrupted by lobbyists and special interests? So I think that if you as an elected official want youth to believe in what you do, and if you really want us to take those roles one day, you need to make us believe that you are transparent and that you are going to carry out with what you said you would do. So I think that that's one way that you can reconnect the disconnected generation, because as Madame Jean a dit tantôt, il y a une génération qui est déconnectée et il faut trouver des façons de nous connecter, parce que sinon vous allez nous perdre. C'est pour ça que les jeunes ne votent plus. Et si vous voulez qu'ils votent, eh bien, c'est à vous d'agir.
Non. Keep your eyes out for a new Apathy is Boring project that will help connect you with your members of parliament to be launched in the next couple of months. Anyways, besides that little plug, I also wanted to say that I think really what's critical for government to provide is a space for dialogue. And Her Excellency has been an amazing facilitator of that over the last 4 years, and I know will continue to be. And I think that government in general needs to do that more. We need to create opportunities for elected officials and youth to come together and get to know each other and, like, talk to each other. And for young people to really be able to ask questions and say, hey, I don't get how this works. How does it work? Often we see that the reason that young people don't get involved is that they don't have a roadmap. It's hard to know how to get involved, and it's hard to know how to connect to elected officials and how to connect to government. So I would really say it's both creating that space for dialogue and also creating a roadmap.
Thank you, Lona. And perhaps from Janet, and then we'll go back to the audience.
I just wanted to jump on top of that and just maybe make two small points, which is the way to empower youth is also to empower adults to be open to the dialogue and the space. And I think we often focus solely on give young people skills and let's empower young people and bring them up without ever creating the space within the world of the adult government-run thing for young people to really be at the decision-making table. I've been consulted on a number of different things at various levels, and I'm pretty sure my voice was never actually at the final decision-making table. And so I think that would be an interesting shift that the adults in the room in positions of power could make in terms of also empowering themselves to be open to young people. But I also think that we need to think about government at multi-levels. And I think local government has a particularly interesting role to play in including young people, because young people on the ground are often very engaged in starting their own initiatives and really getting involved in the issues that are facing them and facing their communities. And I think local government would be very wise to link up with those young people that are taking action on local levels, as well as the ones on the global level.
Thank you, Janet. Do we have any other questions from our audience regarding civic engagement? We do. James, good.
Hi, my name is Anthony Morgan. I am the president of the Black Law Students Association of Canada. And I wanted to ask the scholars, how important is multilingualism to youth engagement and the process of youth empowerment and globalization?
Éloge.
Merci beaucoup, Antoine. Le multilinguisme est très important pour deux raisons principales, à mon avis. The first one is that by learning a new language, this I get to say when I'm on my fifth language and learning more, is that you actually get to understand the way people think, the way people vocalize and express their strongest emotions to one another in their safe spaces. And there's no price for such an understanding in the political domain, in the social domain, in the education domain, and our ability to do that collectively and our ability to create spaces in which such an exchange happens is vital and indispensable. And I think multilingualism, I hate to come back to the fact that sometimes we get bogged into, are two languages good enough? My answer is two are not good enough if there's billions and hundreds of other languages in this world to learn. So I think understanding that dynamics is very important, and that's why multilingualism, not seulement bilingualism, is important.
Would any of the other panelists like to? Mirwas?
Multilingualism itself, I would compare the analogy of an iceberg. And so the language is as much as vital in a social, part of a social fabric of a society, is at the tip of the iceberg. And I think one of the key ingredients of this program is really to bring young Canadians and other young leaders from around the world to experience the Quebec part of Canada in Montreal and affiliated with such a prestigious institution. I think in addition to understanding and appreciating languages, it's also important to dig deep beneath the iceberg. And that's where people's values and people's belief systems are also open up. So I see languages as a very important window of opportunity, if you will, to understand societies and engage with the societies and create the space and dialogue that's necessary to have a transformative experience for global citizens.
And finally, Gabrielle.
This morning we had a chance to spend some time with Her Excellency at the Jean Sauvé House, and I was touched when you started speaking in Spanish, because it shows that you have respect towards my people, and to me that's at the core of communication, when you can respect the person you're talking to and show that you're willing to speak their language. So thank you for having done that this morning, Your Excellency, because it shows respect, and I think if we really want to open up dialogues that are going to lead to real change, there needs to be that respect and that type of communication behind it. So thank you.
Thank you, Gabriel. We can go to our next... Oh, we have a question right at the back over there. And then we'll go to the next. Oh, ça pas l'air à ma...
Oui.
One of the major players in globalization is obviously the private sector, and how to engage that part of our society, not just in globalization, but particularly in engaging young people.
Merci, Justin. Janet Jobson, you want to take a...
I'm not sure I heard correctly, but you're talking about the private sector? Is that it? So I think that's a critically important thing, is that often youth activists are sequestered to civil society and outside of government and outside of the private sector. Although I'm currently busy looking for a job, trying to enter the adult world, and it's very interesting to see that the private sector doesn't really have as much of a problem with my lack of work experience as civil society does. And it's actually far harder for me to go into a position in civil society because it doesn't have the resources to spend 5 years turning me into an excellent project manager or whatever it wants me to be, whereas the private sector, because it doesn't necessarily have the same, not malign it too much, but it doesn't necessarily have the same focus on values, it has the focus on what can we take this unmolded mind and make it do. I think it potentially actually brings in far more young people than any of the other sectors. Although interestingly, in a bit of a segue, the South African president announced last week in the State of the Nation address that in South Africa what we're going to be doing now is giving tax credits to companies that bring in younger people in order to try and really instill an ethos that young people are effective workers and can make a serious contribution in any sector. And I think those kinds of initiatives where you really try and make young people at the forefront and recognize that even without experience they may be very skilled, and even without what you look for on paper from a 50-year-old, they might actually have fantastic ideas, and we should bring them in. But I think we have young social entrepreneurs who do amazing work in all sectors anyway. So I think, the private sector is an interesting place.
Thank you. Ilona.
It's kind of related to the question, but I think it's really critical to look at the connections between volunteerism, civic engagement, and employment. I think they are really connected, and I think we need to start having a dialogue about that. But we also need to encourage leadership in all sectors of society. Young people need, I think, to be given the opportunity to be leaders in the corporate sector. And I think there's amazing young social entrepreneurs that are out there that have the capacity to do amazing things, but don't necessarily have the space. Or an interesting thing that a number of studies have shown is access to circles of influence. mentorship can't just be somebody really nice who makes you feel like you can do stuff. It also has to be somebody who can connect you to people who can help you take your career or your business or your social venture further. So I think really mentorship has to be seen in that light.
Gabriel.
I'd like to give you a concrete example of how Le Monde des Affaires has managed to mobilize itself. I'm working closely with Mr. Jacques Ménard, who is the president of Bank of Montreal. And a year ago, he managed to mobilize not only Le Monde des Affaires, mais il a aussi réussi à mobiliser les citoyens pour justement contrer le décrochage scolaire. Et moi, je crois que lui, c'est un exemple d'un homme d'affaires qui s'est dit, cette réalité, cette problématique, c'est pas l'affaire du gouvernement seulement, c'est l'affaire de tous. Et donc, je le prends à titre d'exemple parce que je pense que beaucoup de personnes peuvent baser leur engagement par rapport à ce que lui fait. Et je remarque le travail que Mme Heather Munro-Bloom ou Mme Judith Woodsworth ou M. Beauchamp de l'ETS qui sont présents ici aujourd'hui, le travail qu'ils ont fait à travers Fusion Jeunesse déjà a un grand impact. And so that's how I believe, or that's how I see a concrete example of how it is already being done and how these people who have so much experience are opening up doors for us, the younger generation, who are leading already many initiatives.
Merci, Gabriel. We're now going to go to the next question, which we'll pose to three of the panelists, Janet Jobson, Gabriel, and Mirwais, for 1 minute each, and then we'll open it back up. What initiatives can be pursued to foster greater intergenerational and intercultural understanding and collaboration around some of the issues you're addressing? Quelles initiatives peuvent être poursuivies pour favoriser une plus grande collaboration ainsi qu'une meilleure compréhension intergénérationnelle et interculturelle en vous basant sur des questions que vous avez abordées aujourd'hui? Janet.
Well, I think I'd like to pick up on what Ilona was talking about in terms of mentorship. I think that connecting personally young people and older, more experienced people together is one of the most powerful things you can do in terms of really instilling intergenerational collaboration, particularly if both the young people involved and those who are their mentors see the ultimate aim as really empowering young people and bringing them to the decision-making table. And so I think personal connections in any, whether it's peers mentoring each other or whether it's older people working with young people, a personal connection creates a stake in something for people. And when you have a stake in something, it's far easier to really get involved and to put your heart into it. And so I think in terms of having true intergenerational collaboration, we need a big shift on the side of the adult world to really welcome in young people. And we need young people to take up the opportunities and really be exceptional when they do, so that we can create these spaces where there's this personal connection that creates a stake and where everyone's on board working together.
Merci. Gabriel.
Oui. Donc, juste pour suivre sur ce que Jeannette a dit, il faut vraiment bâtir des liens concrets et efficaces entre les différentes générations. Il faut prendre et mobiliser les personnes professionnelles comme les baby boomers et les mettre en lien avec les jeunes étudiants universitaires ou les jeunes leaders émergents. Il faut prendre ces jeunes leaders émergents et les mettre en contact avec des jeunes du secondaire. Et il faut prendre ces jeunes du secondaire et les mettre en contact avec les jeunes du primaire. Comme ça, on va créer un cycle qui ne va pas s'arrêter. Et je pense que ça va être une façon de vraiment promouvoir ces échanges intergénérationnels. Et pour vous donner un petit exemple concret, en ce moment, on est en train de construire des robots avec des élèves du secondaire. Et qu'est-ce qu'on a fait? C'est que on leur a apporté ou donné des étudiants de l'ETS et de la Polytechnique qui les aident à construire le robot. Mais non seulement ça, on est allé chercher des professionnels de Bombardier, de CAE, d'Hydro-Québec et de Bell qui viennent aussi les mentorer pour leur permettre de construire des robots qui fonctionnent, qui doivent jouer au soccer, qui valent beaucoup, beaucoup d'argent parce que les jeunes sont en charge de la mécanique, de l'électrique, de la conception et de tout le design. Donc, voilà un exemple concret de comment les plus vieux, les plus jeunes et ceux qui sont entre les deux âges peuvent être unis pour mener à des changements concrets.
Merci, Gabriel. Mirwais.
I think in terms of creating those spaces, we already have a number of lessons that we can look at. But from my personal experience, I think it's vital that we move beyond the tokenistic representation in participation of youth. That, I think, is critical. The second thing, and there is breadth of experience in this room, particularly working with youth, I think we also must be cognizant of quick fixes. Supporting a clinic, for example, for 2 months might be a noble initiative, but that must be sustainable. And I think one of the most important elements also, as Her Excellency Michael Jean rightly pointed out, is shattering the barriers. Mm-hmm. I think linking communities directly, whether it's linking communities in Quebec to the north or linking communities in Quebec to universities and ordinary schools and villages in Afghanistan, is an experiment that has rarely been implemented. So we need to leave beyond the tools and experiences of the past and really usher in innovative mechanisms to bring people together. And so I think it's very important that we build on these lessons and not just pay lip service to many of the rhetoric we're talking about.
Thank you, Mirwais. Now you all get to see why I have the best job in the world to work with these people. Yes, we have a question. Please.
Yeah, it does work. Hello, my name is Felix von Geyer. I'm a sustainable development journalist and also lecturer in international relations. Four of you actually from developing countries, and I'm just wondering what kind of barriers, what kind of opportunities does that actually offer you in terms of being social entrepreneurs, trying to engender change? What kind of issues do you actually perceive really need to be addressed very quickly, and what kind of change needs to come from perhaps the developed countries?
Thank you. I just want to see if there are any other questions, because we may... Yes, there's a person here who's had their hand up for a little while. Sorry, yes. James, if you could... Sorry, just if you could raise your hand a little higher.
Okay. Hi, my name is Karina Gould. I'm the president of the Arts Undergraduate Society. Thank you all for coming and talking about your own civic engagement. I think that's terrific. But for those of us who are youth in the audience today, you're talking about the barriers that need to be broken with adults, or the so-called adult world. I guess what I would like to know is how we can break those barriers, or how to create those spaces, because I think it's nice to talk about it, but what exactly can we do? How did you guys do it, I guess, is the question. Thank you.
And then one more question from the audience, and then we'll bring them back to the scholars. Yes.
I have a question that I'd like Eloge to share in terms of his experience in intergenerational dialogue and moving forward with peace building globally, and if you could share.
Thank you. So I think what we'll do is maybe with respect to Felix's questions, with barriers with respect to those coming from directly from developing countries, perhaps Janet and Mirwais. And then for Karina's question, certainly Ilona, perhaps another, and then finally for Eloge. So, Janet?
I've got to profess I'm not an expert on sustainable development, but I think that what you see in the developing world quite often, and I'm a privileged person from the developing world, and I want to put that out there from the very beginning, is that there's always a complex relationship between, particularly as a young activist, you can actually get a lot of opportunities to be at various events or get sponsorship to go to things if you've managed to make your name as a developing world young activist. And I think there's a problematic part of the tokenism of youth participation that's developed around what I would call youth activist entrepreneurs who are using the potential to be at various events to really get around the world but not necessarily be rooted anywhere and connected anywhere. But there's also very real obstacles to most young people on the ground in the developing world, which are simply, how do you take action and become a youth leader when you're just trying to survive and get through every day? And some of the most inspiring stories that I've come across are from those young people who you would expect just surviving, who actually take the next step. And I think to one of my friends who inspires me on a daily basis because he speaks out very vocally about some very taboo subjects in South Africa. But the only reason he got to where he was because he was living in a rural village in the middle of the Eastern Cape in South Africa, which is the poorest province where 60% of people are unemployed. And he went to a rural school where the teachers maybe showed up 2 days a week to teach. And so he got together a group of himself and five friends, and they went through every single textbook they could get their hands on. And he passed his high school, and he went on to university and got a scholarship, and he worked so hard to get through university, and he ended up getting a master's degree. And when you see someone with such determination against all the odds actually succeeding and then having a platform to really vocalize some of these critical issues, that's the most inspiring thing you can imagine. But I also then think, what would have happened if he'd actually had access to better resources? Wouldn't he have been even more exceptional if he'd actually had someone helping him along the way at various points? And so I think what we need to trust in is the ability of people to be greater than we sometimes think they can be, and to then provide them the opportunity to really fulfill that. And I know I wouldn't be sitting here today if there weren't a series of people in my life that had thought I was better than I possibly could have thought I was on my own. And so I really think the critical thing to get over the barriers is to give people the opportunities, and they will take them up. And that requires, in terms of sustainable development, I was very disappointed at the outcome of Copenhagen, as everyone was, the developed world to do some serious interrogation of itself in terms of what it is doing to the rest of the world in not taking courageous decisions, which is what we need it to do.
Thank you. Nuas.
I'm hesitating because as much as I'm a great admirer of the opportunities presented to me to highlight a particular conflict situation in the regions and experiences others, I must also note the challenges we face here at home with our indigenous communities in particular. And building on that, recognizing that, moving forward, I think the platform provided here is an amazing opportunity for people just like myself and hundreds of others in the audience as well to highlight the stories that are not heard, specifically on Afghanistan. And I can strongly suggest that the voices of ordinary Afghans are lost in translation. The barriers exist. The voices of young people who are 70% of that population never reach our TV screens. We are inundated, we are confronted with the onslaught of violence and oppression. And so these barriers are not, I'm not recommending or suggested any utopianism in this, but there are real efforts on our part required to reach out to these communities, whether it's Haiti beyond the headlines, whether it was Sri Lanka during the tsunami, or it is Afghanistan where we've made considerable sacrifices. But I'm somehow, I think I cannot hide my emotions and compassion about my experience as a child. I cannot remain indifferent to the injustices that continue. But as much as there is a desire among the public, us, I think the government is still far from giving a platform for Kenyans to link back to many of these societies. So I think number one priority for the government as a whole would be to create those linkages and break the barriers through an open government process.
Thanks, Mirwais. And now to Karina's question, I believe, about how did you get involved? Ilona and then Gabrielle.
Sure. So just in terms of how to go beyond tokenism and really make sure that young people are able to talk to the people who are making decisions and really be a part of those decisions, one thing is there's a bunch of them in this room. So make sure to talk to them afterwards. Make sure to talk to the people and who are in decision-making positions, and don't be intimidated. Make sure that your voice is heard. And I tend to be kind of a pain in the butt a lot of the time, and really, am not afraid to say what I think. And I think that really is how Apathy Is Boring has been able to do what we do, which is create a dialogue between elected officials and youth, but also really empower young people to have the tools to seek out their members of parliament, seek out elected officials, but also seek out other decision makers and really make sure that they feel empowered to speak to them, but also be listened to. We have a lot of resources on our website that I would encourage everybody to check out, specifically in terms of student governance and how students who have their own governments in the context of a university can make an impact in the university governance, which is a great place to start making a difference, that's for sure.
Gabrielle.
One of my mentors once told me, Gabrielle, if you really want to be a social entrepreneur, you have to realize that you will not get a salary for years. Which got me really scared, and which is why many young people are scared of getting involved in these issues, because they think that they're not going to be able to pay the bills at the end of the month. And I find that very sad, because I find that sometimes our work is very undervalued, although I think we contribute a lot to society. Social involvement is not a part-time job. That's the first thing that one needs to understand. It's not a part-time job. It's like playing a sport. It's like being in the Olympics. If you want to be good at it, you need to give it your all on a daily basis without stopping, because that's how you're going to win that famous gold medal. And just to follow up on what Ilona was saying, you need to knock on doors. If you have a great idea, don't let it stay inside this room. If you go to forums, if you go to conferences, si tu vas à des colloques, don't just speak. Go to the action. That's what we're lacking right now. If we really want to innovate socially, technologically, environmentally, we need to take these ideas that are in here and put them on paper. And yes, go and knock on doors. That's what I did with Concordia University when I first had the idea behind Youth Fusion. And I know that I sent many, many emails to Dr. Woodsworth. She must have been tired of getting all my emails, because I really wanted one university to believe in this work. And then I approached all the others, and they all said yes. So you need to persevere, and yes, knock on doors, many doors, and don't be afraid of speaking up when you have an idea, because who knows which ear is going to get it and hear it.
Thank you. Eloge, to the third question that was posed directly to you.
Thank you, Eliane. For a couple months now, I've been involved through the Montreal Holocaust Museum and Center in the project called From Ashes to Light, bringing together survivors of the genocide against Tutsis in Rwanda and Holocaust survivors. And it's been a very powerful experience that bridges this gap of time, where you get to understand the weight of history weighing on your shoulder, and the need to articulate that which humanity lost in these tragedies in a way that is accessible to all of us, all of you and I, who have the responsibility for preventing other genocides from happening. And similar projects and similar initiatives need to be going on in all areas, including the environment, including youth and political participation, and more particularly including the place and the space of the first citizens of this great land. I need to tell the story of this first anecdote. My first feeling, the gut feeling, when I realized that in my immigration paper they were citizens, immigrants, and Indians or Aboriginals. That's probably the old forms in the immigration Canada. But the weight of that symbol to be other than citizens and be Indian in Canada is a very serious question that, as young people and as older generation, we all need together to engage with. And I feel that, and the question you ask, which is at the heart of this whole conversation, really, of how do you get engaged? In the law faculty, for example, I've seen in the crowd people like Gordon Eckenberg, who provided funds for our faculty to make sure that we are able to go in different communities in Montreal and volunteer for legal information, for example, which is a valuable service. I have friends who decided to take their summer and go to Rwanda to work for 3 months. But this cost money, and the president of the university, I'm sure she won't mind with me reminding people with checks around here, that you need to provide these scholarships. So there is a certain sense that you are very proud of us for having volunteered and done a lot of great and important things, but this costs money, and I think that revisiting the 1960s struggles where we actually get to go on the street and make our voice heard by other means is not necessary because the audience we are speaking to are the people who in the 1960s were doing the protesting. So there's not much to be teaching you intergenerationally speaking. Thank you.
Thank you, Ilash. I had a final question for the panel, but I think in the interest of time, what we'll do is, in fact, Karina asked the question in terms of how did you get involved and how do you encourage others. I would then ask if Mirwais or Janet would like to add anything to that question that was posed about how you would get involved or factors or strategies that can incite more youth to get involved. And then I think we'll wrap it up because we have someone very special we'd like to hear from before everyone has to go. So is there anything either of you wanted to add before we...
Sure. From the beginning, Desiree, I was a bit hesitant to struggle with sound bites, but here I'm going to be quick. I think that it wouldn't be justice to provide concrete examples, but I will leave you with one poem that has shaped my life since grade 2 when I learned it in Persian in Dari. And I think it will be something that you can take away and look at how you can contribute. It says, humans are parts of the same body, created of the same essence. If you are unaware of the pains of others, you are unworthy of being called a human being. I think the pain is there in an unprecedented manner in our lives. It is there in our face. I think, just like an advisor counseled me, that you won't know it, how to get involved, unless you try it. The moment is not tomorrow, it is not the past, it is now in this room when we leave here. So I hope we think about that connection from Quebec to the north, to the villages where injustice exists, and to say yes and to act on those things.
Thank you, Mirwais. Janet.
I think I'd just like to build on that and really say that it's not a huge thing to start. And you can do something, whether it's, I mean, possibly the most meaningful moments in my career as an activist have been individual moments where I've had a connection with someone and felt like I've helped them to do something, whether it was taking a friend of mine to get an HIV test, or because I was helping to produce the Vagina Monologues, one of my friends managed to come forward to me and tell me about her own experience of rape because I managed to create some kind of space. These are very small things that you can do for other human beings, and I think your poem reflects also a saying we have in South Africa, which is umuntu ngumuntu kabantu, which is a person is only a person through other human beings. And so for me to be fully human means for every single human being to be fully human and to be recognized as such. And that's what motivates me and motivates me to make personal connections. As much as I may want to be an advocate on a global level or on a national level for critical issues, there's also just the personal moment of being there for another human being and connecting with them and helping them to be everything that they are so that we can be everything that we are. And I think that would be the first step that needs to be taken.
I can't think of a more powerful note to end on, and I would invite all of you, because I know you have more questions, to please do come and meet with these, forget young leaders, leaders, during the reception immediately following. Nous vous remercions encore une fois, tous ici présents, de cette discussion très dynamique et très enrichissante sur les enjeux du 21e siècle particulièrement engageant. Il me fait maintenant grand plaisir de maintenant inviter Son Excellence à venir partager ses réflexions personnelles sur la rencontre.
Je tiens beaucoup à ce qu'il reste là. Vous pouvez imaginer ce qui m'inspire dans tous ces dialogues que j'ai eu à vivre avec, que je continue de vivre avec de jeunes aussi articulés que ceux-là, qui ont vraiment un sens profond de ce que veut dire la responsabilité partagée. C'est-à-dire le devoir d'agir, le devoir de non-indifférence. Each dialogue really energizes me, and Ilona knows that. We've had several experiences together. And as I was looking at the group here, I realized that I could actually relate them to certain environment of action. Je reviens d'une visite d'État au Guatemala, et au Guatemala, nous avons eu des dialogues jeunesse comme celui-ci, dans la capitale, mais aussi à l'extérieur, dans la région de Solola, San Juan de la Laguna, Petén. Et c'était la même énergie chez les jeunes. Tous avec le sens de la responsabilité d'agir, le devoir de non-indifférence, la possibilité vraiment de faire toute une différence autour de soi, un geste à la fois. Et là-bas, on parlait de violence, on parlait de la question de l'impunité, qui est une question grave, et on parlait aussi de l'importance de stratégies communes continentales sur l'ensemble de l'hémisphère des Amériques. Avec Ilona, qui a grandi au Yukon, mais qui est très active dans l'ensemble du Canada, on a exploré avec quantité de jeunes au pays l'importance de la responsabilité civique. Et avec des moyens très créatifs, on a été à l'écoute des jeunes, de leurs initiatives, et tous disent exactement ce qu'on a entendu là. Il faut que nous soyons inclus et considérés là où les décisions se prennent. Intéressant. Rwanda, où j'irai certainement, là encore, il y a, oui, une expérience qui parle au monde entier, qui parle à l'humanité. Et ça m'a beaucoup frappé ce que vous avez dit tout à l'heure sur, quand vous avez regardé la fiche d'entrée, et on disait citoyen, résident, et on disait indien. Et je sais à quoi ça fait référence dans votre esprit. Parce que c'est partant de là qu'on a divisé chez vous. Et c'est partant de là aussi, sous un legs colonial terrible, on a permis à certains en quête de pouvoir de monter des hommes et des femmes les uns contre les autres. C'est terrible. Il faut apprendre de cela. Et je reviens à ce que disait Madame Sauvé. Il faut apprendre de toutes les expériences humaines. Il faut apprendre et tirer des leçons de tous les épisodes de l'histoire, parce que c'est seulement comme ça que l'humanité avance. Il n'y a pas une affaire guatémaltèque ou canadienne ou rwandaise ou sud-africaine ou afghane. Il y a une seule et même expérience humaine. But the problem is we're not learning. We don't pay attention. And ignorance is actually an obstacle to progress. South Africa. When I was there, I also engaged with a lot of young people. On a state visit in 2006 in several African countries, and I called it my journey of hope, because the idea was about showing the potential in Africa, showing where the vivid forces are. Not Africa of all misery. There are huge challenges. But within the civil society, everywhere in the world, including in African countries, this is where hope lies and this is where the solutions are. And I saw a lot of young people there, again, with that great awareness, that sense of social commitment.
using all tools, including arts, theater, to raise awareness and to work together. I saw a wonderful group working, and it's an initiative backed by Le Cirque du Soleil, and they were using the art of circus to bring young people together, black and white. And you know, in circus, you have to be physically very close to each other. I mean, your security, your life depends on how the other will just lend a hand. And in the context of the South African history, the context of apartheid, we know what it means. Being physically connecting to one another beyond the barrier of race and breaking down the rule of apartheid this way was powerful. I was in tears. I was just in tears to see this happening and how those kids were embracing each other. C'était très fort. Et toute la solidarité en Afrique du Sud. La force des femmes. And this is the first time where I said to an audience of women entrepreneurs in South Africa, black and white together, and I said, empowering women is empowering a nation. And they just stood and said, wow, empowering women is empowering a nation. Obvious to say, but it's important to realize that, like empowering young people is empowering a nation. Afghanistan. In my role as in my responsibility as Commander-in-Chief, I got to visit Afghanistan on several occasions. But I would never make a visit without having a civil society component, meeting with Afghans who, like you, are really pulling all efforts together for a country where justice prevails, where life and the creative forces can triumph over the forces of destruction. Amazing women I've met there, Afghan women. Amazing young Afghan men fighting for women emancipation, justice, security. Children in Afghanistan, in schools where I spent time outside the wires listening to them and daring to dream big and saying, young girls saying, you know, I want to be a doctor, I want to be an engineer, and young boys in that same school sharing that same dream. And when I asked them, what is your biggest fear? They said, well, stepping on a landmine. But they still have a dream. C'est quelque chose, ça. Et quand je reviens au pays ensuite et que je dis ici, je parle, oui, de nos soldats qui sont là-bas, mais je dis aussi, il existe des forces au cœur de la société civile afghane qui sont remarquables, qui sont incroyables. Les gens me font, hein? Société civile afghane, ça existe? Vous en avez un ici qui vous le dit que ça existe et que les solutions sont là. There are no solutions for Afghanistan without the civil society's perspective. You used a poem. A poem can say it all. Words are important. When I said to you that I heard young people saying to me, Excellency, the arts saved my life. What they were saying is, from experience, I was involved in very violent situations.
But I was a lot of money. I had a lot of money in my pocket. I was driven by circumstances to living in the street and being totally manipulated by criminal organizations. But I had lost my dignity. But I found a space where through art I went back to the power of words. I had lost the words. And by losing the words, I had lost contact with myself, my inner capacity as a human being. We need to be listening to these words also. We need to be listening to people saying that. It's profound. Et à vous, Monsieur Trudeau, à la question que vous avez posée, en la posant, vous avez la réponse. On en a déjà parlé, vous et moi. Il faut prendre ce temps. Il faut prendre ce temps d'ouvrir des espaces de parole pour permettre aux citoyens d'aller de la parole aux actes, de passer des mots à l'action. Il faut prendre le temps aussi de soutenir les initiatives qui viennent des citoyens eux-mêmes, parce que les solutions viennent de là. C'est capital. Moi, j'ai accepté de devenir gouverneur général sur cette prémisse uniquement. C'est-à-dire, en sachant très bien que là où je vais, chaque fois que je vais, et je choisis très bien où je vais, j'ouvre un espace qui permet à des gens d'être reconnus dans ce qu'ils font et dans le meilleur d'eux-mêmes. Et je me suis dit que cette institution pouvait servir à ça. À ça. Merci beaucoup. Merci à vous.
Good afternoon, everyone. A little bit low. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Ivan Nielsen. I'm currently serving this year as the president of the Student Society of McGill University. I hope you all, as I did, thoroughly enjoyed the discourse and discussion provided by our panelists and, of course, the reflections provided by our Governor General. So it is my honor to thank, on behalf of the students of McGill and, in fact, the whole McGill community, our panelists, obviously, for their vibrant and dynamic discussion which they provided to us, and, of course, everybody in the audience for participating in the inaugural Jean Sauvé address, and particularly our engaged audience members who are helping us to ask the questions and hopefully our panelists to find some answers. And, of course, our Governor General, Excellence, thank you for gracing us with your presence here today and with your inspirational words of wisdom, truly. So I'd like to invite everybody now to a reception taking place in the lobby of the Arts Building just outside the theater, where hopefully we can continue some of these discussions amongst ourselves and with the panelists as well. So now I must ask you, ladies and gentlemen, would you please rise for the departure of Her Excellency, the Right Honorable Michael Jean, Governor General of Canada. Mesdames et Messieurs, veuillez-vous lever, s'il vous plaît, pour le départ de Son Excellence, la très honorable Michael Jean, Gouverneur Général du Canada.